discussion of two particular subjects, UFOs and near-death and after-death experiences. To contact the Bigelow Foundation during the work week, call Angela Thompson between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. at area code 702-456-1606. That's Angela Thompson at area code 702-456-1606. And now, Area 2000.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Area 2000. Hope you had a great Christmas. I certainly did. My name is Art Bell. This program is kind of a special thing every week. Kind of. It is very special. It is made possible by the Bigelow Foundation, as I said in the open. If you would like to contact the Bigelow Foundation, Angela Thompson is your contact there, and you can reach her during the business week at area code 702-456-1606. 456-1606. All right. We've got a lot on tap this morning. Linda Howe leads it with her report, her look into another reality, another dimension, another area. And then we'll hear from Chad Dietkin. Chad is going to talk to us, and we've heard from him before, actually, in a crowded telephone booth with Linda Howe in England. You may recall that program, and he spoke to us then and will now about crop circles. And so stand by for that. A lot of fascinating discussion this morning. Let us begin all the way back in Philadelphia with Linda Howe. Linda, good evening. Oh, let's see. Perhaps we should be going here. Linda Howe?
Hi, Art.
Hi, Linda.
And Merry Christmas to you and to Bob Bigelow, the Bigelow Foundation, and Chad Dietkin in Canada. He is a true colleague, and he and I and others spent two very complex and full weeks in England this past summer investigating the crop circles, and I reported from there with him and on several of the stories that were happening there. And it was only a week or two that I was in Michigan with Dr. Levengood, who has been examining some of those exact same stems, seeds, and various other parts of the wheat and rye plants in England that we brought back, and has found that there have been some kind of fundamental changes at the chemical and the physical level of those plants that, quoting Dr. Levengood, cannot be hoaxed. And I think tonight what will be valuable is that Chad brings perspective on that phenomenon from Canada to England, is up on to speed on what has happened in the United States, and so he has an international perspective. And I thought also that while that phenomenon has been happening, it has happened in parallel with animal mutilations in England, the United States, and other countries, all happening at the same time that crop formations happened this summer. And it seems now, year-round, month after month, whether it is Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, Leo Sprinkle, or any of the investigators using hypnosis, or a researcher like myself who is not using hypnosis but is very interested in the patterns of abductions around the world, all of these phenomena that seem to be having to do with another reality that is outside of the one that we accept every day that we get up and we go to work and we come home, something else is happening around us day and night, affecting thousands of people globally. Just a month ago, researchers in Canada, psychologists at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada, had spent months doing research with what were considered to be people who, they said, reported at least anomalous phenomena and some described as UFOs or unusual sightings in the sky. And in the November 1993 Journal of Abnormal Psychology, which is a very respected journal, these investigators in Canada, led by Dr. Nicholas P. Spanos, a professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa, they reported in that journal a summary of their findings over several months concerning people who had reported some kind of an anomalous phenomenon, including what we would describe as unidentified flying objects in the sky. The researchers found the eyewitnesses to be as intelligent and mentally healthy as other people and not more prone to fantasy. Of 49 adults who had seen unidentified flying objects, 10 said that they had seen a craft close up. This is consciously having nothing to do with hypnosis. 10 said that they had seen an alien being. 7 described verbal contact with alien beings. 8 reported telepathic contact. 7 remembered total body paralysis at some point, and in most cases that would be when they were asleep and waking up and noting that they could not move. 8 reported missing time, which has been reported by Bud Hopkins since 1980. And 2 recalls going aboard a spacecraft. These are conscious memories having nothing to do with hypnosis. And in this summary that was reported, the whole bottom line was that these people were no more different than you, I, or anyone that was considered to be normal in the population. Now, another part of this is, what did the media start doing as a result of this Canadian report that appeared in a very respectable journal? There were newspapers all over the United States and Canada, maybe other parts of the world, and they began doing their own interviews with people that said that they, too, were haunted by something that seemed, from their definition, to fit the category of UFOs. Well, recently in Washington, D.C., a story with a full-color photograph of 2 women in Catlett, Virginia, appeared in the newspaper, and the title of this was Living in the Light on Earth, They Are Haunted by Shadows of UFOs. And in the context of this Canadian report on people who are basically mentally sound, their intelligence is no different from the average population, but that they are reporting some kind of an interaction with something that is comes in form of a disc, has light, and seems in some way to have an interaction with humans. These 2 women reported to the Gannett News Service, which made the papers in USA Today and other stories, that in their small town of Catlett, Virginia, these 2 women said that, and this was a quote, sometimes a spaceship, and they described it as a saucer, touches down at the corner of the farm that they live on in a Virginia horse farm 50 miles west of Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. They said that sometimes, and I'm quoting from the Skinnet News Service, the beings, and this is their quote, materialize out of thin air. That has been one of the patterns in what we would call the UFO human abduction syndrome now for at least 30 years. People say that something that appears to be a being of some sort actually comes into their outside right out of the air in front of them. In other cases, people report seeing beings coming down a road, and in some cases actually coming out of a deep dip. In this case, these women in Virginia, as we speak, during the fall of and winter of 1993, are saying that they are seeing what they call beings that don't resemble humans are materializing out of thin air. Then they describe what we all have heard from Bud and from David and from others on Area 2000 of being taken sometimes to something that is full of light, that they have been poked and prodded, and that they have had excisions taken from their skin. And they describe a trauma, but they are returned. They are returned to their horse farm in Virginia, and they discuss it from the point of view of humans who have had an experience that may be akin to a cat that we might take to a veterinarian. And we do it because we want something to happen to perpetuate the life of that cat, and the experience of the veterinarian is frightening and traumatic for the cat, but we, the humans who take that cat, know that there is a good reason. There may be, as is suggested by several abductees, that as traumatic as these abductions are, there may be in the long run some reason for why this is happening to humans globally. that in the long run we may learn might have something to do with our own survival. No proof, and this is still a huge unknown. But I think it is very significant for our Area 2000 listeners to realize that psychologists in Canada, maybe other universities, are taking this syndrome extremely seriously. They're doing research and reporting on it, and newspapers, at least in the United States, are making the effort to go out and do research and contact people to say that they have had contact with something that they think is beyond at least the reality of the day-to-day earthquake life that we live here. And if so, the big question is, as we end 1993 and we begin 1994, are we going to craft revolutionary science and so, as a globe of government, we aren't alone in the universe?
Well, how would you predict that yourself, Linda? What does 94 look like to you?
Well, I keep hearing from Washington, D.C. contacts that something is afoot from a political level. Now, what that force or energy or whatever it is that is behind these current speculative rumors are, I'm not sure. But there seems to be a growing sense that in this coming new year, that at least some kind of a public statement might be made, maybe by this administration or by another country or another government.
While we're on that subject, Linda, the new Secretary of Defense, Bobby Ray Inman, Secretary-designate, has allegedly made a very interesting statement in the past about UFOs. Have you heard about that?
Well, he was tracked down by a Maryland investigator and was asked if he knew about MJ-12. And for those who have stayed with Area 2000 over the past few months, they would know that MJ-12 refers to possibly an inside group inside the government that has originated from the Truman administration and has been replaced, as people have died, by others who have, you might say, the keys to the kingdom of the knowledge about UFOs and other life forms. If there's any truth to MJ-12, the one person who might know about their knowledge would be Bobby Ray Inman. He has served in the government and in the intelligence community for a long portion of his life, and I think that the timing right now that he would be tapped to take this particular very important position in the cabinet of Secretary of Defense is, if nothing else, the timing is interesting, and he has, if of anybody, he may have knowledge about this other phenomenon we'll call another life form in the universe. He may know that we are, in fact, interacting with or being interacted with by other life forms, and if he is a Secretary of Defense, 1994 may be the first year where someone in that kind of position in the government might also be in a position to finally talk to us honestly about what, or at least a portion of what, the government knows. My own sense of things is that we have only 6 years until we turn to the year 2000. In those 6 years, if we don't get past this paradigm that we're alone in the universe, something is truly askew. It does not make sense. There are too many eyewitness testimonies, too many confidential military sources, too many intelligence sources that are speaking and saying, yes, we have had ongoing communication, relationships, interactions with something else out there in the universe since at least the 1940s. And now we're in the 90s. We have to come up to speed with the facts. And it may be that the government has been correct, that it may be that in the long run, if we all look back and say, yes, it took half a century to get through all of the old conditioning about our being alone in the universe. It may have taken 50 years to get the population of the United States and other countries up to the point where they could say, all right, we can accept the fact we're not alone in the universe, and that then we have to deal with the implications of the statements We're not alone.
Well, again, with Bobby Ray Inman, Linda, he is renowned for saying exactly what he feels.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a team player, somebody who will do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. You have to wonder if it couldn't be something as simple as a question put to the new Secretary of Defense by somebody in the press early on about something like this to break it all open.
Well, we could all hope that would be the case, but you have to also remember he may have been independent of mind in his career, but you cannot have served in the agencies that he has and not be some kind of a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think personally that the reason that the policy of silence of this government and probably other countries has survived for so long is art. This is a story that is very difficult to tell. People don't have the ears and the mindset to hear about another life form or intelligence involved with the planet in all these various facets that we talk about every week. So it may be that it has been easy for the government to wait out a kind of generational shift, one generation, second generation. Now we're moving into a third generation since the 1940s, and even if Bobby Ray Inman knows specific details, he may also be saying, look, we have to wait X number of more years before we can tell the whole story. But my point of view personally is, as a person who has come, lived in the United States and been a journalist and a writer, is at least in this government structure, that we as a public, we need to know more about what the truth is, because it may affect our future. And that's the part that I think is the hard nut to crack. The government has a story it doesn't know how to tell, but it also is representing a public that by constitutional rights has a right to know, and by future rights should know in order to make some kind of informed comment or reaction to what it may unfold next year or the year after. And that's the hard part. And it may be something that would be worth asking the radio listeners. If they were in the shoes of an administration and they were faced with the complete and total knowledge that we had another intelligence interacting with this planet that was other than human and more sophisticated, would it make sense to inform the entire planet now, or would there be arguments to perpetuate the policy of silence? That would be a very interesting question to debate.
Well, it sure would, Linda. Of course, once a lie has been told, the older it gets, I think, the more momentum is accrued toward continuing the lie. That's the problem. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger every year, and when you finally admitted it, or if you were to announce it, you would be revealing the fact that for this X number of years, you had been lying to the American public.
Right. And there was one government guy, and I really believe he was talking heartfelt. He said to me, this goes back many years ago, he said, the people associated with, he referred to it as MJ-12, and I think of MJ-12 now as like the word Kleenex or Xerox or kind of a generic term that simply means people on the inside who have had the very difficult challenge of writing an almost impossible story of contact with another intelligence that we don't comprehend, and it apparently does not comprehend us very well, that this MJ-12 generic term would refer to people that this man said, this was the quote to me, they would rather be dead before this story comes out. Now, the only reason that I can think about that is that it has been such a complex horse to ride, so to speak, of dealing with other knowledge that was completely outside of the experience of the planet as a whole on a natural day-to-day basis. And that there were certain people in our government and other governments who had knowledge that was completely outside of the day-to-day survival and activities of our planet. and that over the last 50 years that they have had to make the hardest decisions about whether or not they kept this information to themselves and monitored whatever was going on, or would they reveal part of it. If they revealed part of the story about contact from another intelligence, how far would it unravel? How big would the story go? And then the only issue would be, social and money and all of that, would it remain in the same status quo as it exists? And it may be that the government has had psychiatrists and psychologists and various other people hired telling them, once you open this Pandora's box, you have to be ready with answers or you're going to have an unruly mass on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything like that happened to Art, the policy of silence by government may not be as insidious as it has been portrayed sometimes. It may actually have been an act of benevolence, an effort to ignorance is bliss.
Well, you know they're going to paint it that way, surely.
Yeah. And in the long run, here we are sitting at the transition of centuries. And it may be that there are a lot of people, we'll call it inside this generic MJ-12, using that simply as a symbol of people on the inside and not knowing what it's called now. They may want the story out, but that they're afraid of the repercussions.
All right. Linda, as always, a wonderful report, and you generated plenty of questions with it, too. Things to think about.
So, and when you start with Chad, who is a true friend and colleague, this spillover to the crop circles raises this interesting question that Colin Andrews, George Wingfield, and others 3-4 years ago said, why is it that the English army seems to be, and that's not proven, but seems to be involved with creating hoaxes in the crop circles in order to convince the rest of the world that there's nothing to this phenomenon but a hoax? We know that the science says the hoax does not answer it. Why would the English military have been called into action to create something to cover it up?
You've really caught me by surprise. English Army, how is the English Army, how are they or were they involved, Linda?
It's back to the 90 and 91 research that was done where BBC TV, Nippon Television, others brought infrared, they brought star scopes, they brought a whole series of cameras and higher-tech technology into the crop circle summers with the idea that they would track it, watch it, monitor it for 2 weeks at a time and see if they could find anything that would give them an insight as to how these circles were made. During one of those watches, they found in the middle of a circle that there was a Bible, some sticks, and some candles and very odd things. Colin Andrews said at the time, George Wingfield said at the time, that they had sources inside of England who said that the army in England had been, or people were telling them that the army had been ordered by someone to put those particular elements, a Bible and a candle and some various odd things, inside of the middle of a circle. Whole point being that they were trying to move the crop circles, apparently, into some kind of, for lack of a better word, we'll just say occult or mystical association, and to take it completely away from the possibility that there actually was something from somewhere else in the universe perhaps involved with our planet. None of us know who is making the crop circles, but the fact that people were in England and getting, we'll call it underground, non-proven, but at least so-called confidential sources saying that the military was even involved in keeping the story quiet. It comes to this huge issue. Why? Why would crop circles around the world be considered a national security issue by any government? Why would the entire planet not be involved with tracking, monitoring, and trying to find out what was behind the crop circle phenomenon.
Well, that's a good segue to Chad Deepkin. Linda, as always, it's wonderful. Next week, where do we find you?
I should be here.
All right, in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Well, I sure appreciate your report, and it's a great segue.
And thank you, and Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year.
Take care. Thank you, Linda. That's Linda Howe with a glimpse into another reality, actually the reality that we're going to be exploring in just a moment with Chad Deepkin. This is Area 2000.
From Jackie Gons Plaza downtown, this is KDWN Las Vegas.
And good evening from Las Vegas. I'm Art Bell, Area 2000 underway. My guest, Chad Deepkin, is founder of Pacific Research. He has been conducting extensive investigations into the crop circle phenomenon since 1990, both in Canada and in England. His specialty, detecting and photographing physical anomalies, which cannot be accounted for, repeating, which cannot be accounted for by hoaxing. In 1992, he was a member of Project Argus, the most extensive scientific research effort to date. His findings provided a substantial portion of the Argus report and were recently reprinted in the MUFON Journal. He is founder of Pacific Research, as I said, has written many articles, as well as an 18-page report on Canadian crop circles. He's been interviewed numerous times on radio, television, and in the newspapers, and has lectured in Vancouver, Bath, Glastonbury, England, and the Whole Life UFO Conference in New York. Although he works independently, he is in close contact with key researchers such as Colin Andrews, George Wingfield, Dr. W.C. Levengood, and many others. Here is Chad Deepkin. Chad, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Oh, Art. Thanks very much for having me on again.
Sure. Where do we find you? Where are you this evening?
I'm currently in Seattle, enjoying Christmas with my relatives.
Well, we've got a better connection than we did at that phone booth in England. Chad, I guess I'd like to begin with your career. How and why you got into all this? What in the world led you into this kind of research, Chad?
Well, Art, I've been interested in UFOs in the past, but not more than most ordinary citizens. Until 1990, when I saw a TV show, Unsolved Mysteries, it was on crop circles. It was quite a good show, and that was the first time I'd ever been exposed to the crop circle phenomenon. And it once I heard about the facts of this strange phenomenon, I realized immediately that there was something very, very odd going on that we cannot explain in any way in traditional terms. Our science and technology was not able to explain what was going on here. And this was, it seemed to me that it was like a door that was opening to possibly another dimension.
When, Chad, did the whole crop circle phenomenon begin? I mean, has it been going on forever? Is it just something that we noticed suddenly had been going on for some time, do you think? Or did it have a definitive beginning?
It's very, very difficult to trace it back throughout history, although we do find occasional references to a phenomenon that appears to be similar to crop circles. But it really came into public prominence in the late 70s and early 80s. And the reason for that is because they started appearing in numbers in one particular area of the world, and that is in south central England, in an area of Stonehenge, Avebury, Silbury, megalithic monuments dating back to pre-Druid times.
Huh.
During the early 80s, the numbers were quite minor. There were maybe 3, 4, 5, half a dozen per year, and progressively each year we saw more and more. And Colin Andrews and Pat Delgado were one of the first researchers that started investigating this on a full-time basis.
But at that point, it was apparently confined to Great Britain?
That's right. Yes, it was. And not only that, but they were just simple circles. That's how it began, very few in number. And over the next few years, through the 80s, each year progressively saw more and more of these circles, and they became more and more complex. So there was a definite evolutionary process involved here.
When you were in England, I had a chance, as you'll recall, to chat with a fellow who claimed that he was faking crop circles and had done many.
Yes.
So you've looked at this aspect of it. It makes the whole thing very controversial. Fellow people like him, convince the public it doesn't take much. One man admitting that he's been faking it, and everybody goes, oh, well, okay. And they dismiss it.
That's right. That fellow is Robert Irving that we had in the phone booth with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the approach I take to crop circles is it's a physical investigation. I look at the actual way the stems are bent, any sort of anomalous effects on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. I look for footprints and any other signs that I can find in trying to determine whether a person could have been responsible for this. And when we're talking about crop circles to the public, I think this is the most important thing to address, because that is the most obvious answer that comes to people's minds, is that, oh, these things are just hoax, and it's a bunch of college students or whatnot having fun with researchers, and that the more us researchers look at the phenomenon, the more people try to have fun with it. So I think it's important to lay this to rest. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever, and I've spent 4 years at this, that people, although there have been some hoaxes perpetrated, that people simply are not involved in the vast majority of these crop circles. It's just not possible.
Well, why, I guess, is my next question. Why is it not possible? And what do you see in the human-produced crop circles that you don't see in the others, or turn that question around?
Okay, first of all, there are several people involved here. Probably the most prominent ones are Doug and Dave. They were the two elderly gentlemen who first came forward about 3 years ago. They're British, and they went to the press and said that they had created all the crop circles since 1978. Then Robert Irving came along, and also a strange fellow named Jim Schnabel. Now, what these people all have in common is that not one of them has any proof that they had done any of the formations. These are simply claims, and we've put all four of them to test. We've got them to make crop circles in public. Doug and Dave were filmed making a crop circle, very famous case, and it was presented on a video called the Crop Circle Communique.
Yeah, I saw them. They had a board and a chain, and they would tromp about with it. So what did you notice of their efforts? Could they produce one in the time allotted, and did it meet the requirements of other crop circles that you've examined?
No, they actually failed dismally. We allowed them to make a crop circle in ideal conditions, in daylight, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of crop circles are made at night. We allowed them to use ideal conditions. They only got halfway done in their allotted time. They had to quit. The other reason they quit is because the result was very obviously quite pathetic. Most of the stocks are still standing up. They popped up. It looked quite a mess. There was no beautiful flow to the lay of the crop at all. And when you look at an authentic one, most of them have incredibly beautiful lay. They're perfectly pressed flat to the ground. They look like they've been combed into place. When the light is shining off them, they have a tremendous sheen to them. Just a very beautiful thing to behold. And none of these people, Doug and Dave, Robert Irving, or Jim Schnabel, have ever been able to produce anything in public that looks like a real occurrence. So that's one reason. And the other reason is that there are so many anomalous effects that I have photographed and recorded that simply can't be done by the human hand. And some of these effects are multiple layering. It's where you get the intersection of, say, a path with a ring, or a path with a circle. I have seen as many as four different layers, and it's not just one layer of crop on top of the other going in different directions, but they're interwoven with each other without any damage to the stalks. You'll have to remember that the stalks are very brittle. Most of the formations occur late in the harvest season, and they're very dried out. You try to bend them the slightest bit, and they will crimp or break. What I saw had no crimson. There was no sign of footprints in the soil.
Are you suggesting that the stalks are so brittle that pressed as they are in the making of the circle, whatever it is that does it, they should have broken?
Not in just pushing them down, they will be crimped, but in trying to interweave them, you have to look at it like weaving a cloth. It's quite intricate. In doing that by hand, you have to bend them seriously, and you will find crimps or bends at various places along the stalk, whereas in an authentic crop circle, there's only one single bend, and that is at the ground level.
Hmm.
Other things I've seen is, in some cases, literally thousands of individual stalks still standing, single individual stalks. Most of them are just inches apart, and they had never been flattened to the ground. There was no crimp or any mark of a crease. They had simply never gone down.
While getting all the other ones around them.
That's right. And anybody using a mechanical device, it would have had to be just inches wide.
Or even one would imagine a meteorological explanation of some sort would also affect them uniformly. That's weird.
Yes, and we've looked at every possible explanation, and like initially we're just trying to eliminate people because they've caused us the most problems, the claims of hoaxes. So we've tried to eliminate those, and with what I've described, and there are literally dozens of other things I have noted that simply couldn't be done by human beings. Not only that, but I've approached Robert Irving and Doug Bauer of the Doug and Dave team, asked them about these strange anomalous effects, and they didn't even have any idea what I was talking about. They had no idea what I was talking about to them. Their answer to me was simply that we just make them. We can't explain to you what you find. You're probably imagining things.
So just out of idle curiosity, why would Dave and Doug, why would they do this? Is it just to get people going? I mean, what reason do they give?
Well, those two fellows claimed that they were doing it for fun. It started out as a prank, and because of the response that they got from us, the attention, that they discontinued it and did more and more and more. Now, first of all, you have to realize that there have been over 3,000 formations just in England since the early 80s. So these two guys are trying to claim having done 3,000 formations only during the 3 months in summer, pretty well, because that's the time you find crop circles. Sneaking out at night three times a week without their wives knowing that they were out in the field, spending at least 4 to 6 hours at night, usually in very dismal conditions. If you've ever been to England, even in the summer, you know it's pretty rough out there. A lot of rain, cold, dank, muddy fields. And that they were doing this for fun, it really defies the imagination.
Doesn't add up. Besides, where else are crop circles now found? It obviously is not just Great Britain. I know there have been reports here in this country.
That's right.
I would imagine in your Canada. And elsewhere, how much of a worldwide phenomenon is it now?
Well, we've been averaging about 1 to 2 dozen in Canada per season. The same goes for the States. This is just a rough estimate. We've got reports from Holland, from Eastern Europe, from Russia, from Germany, from Japan, from Australia. I've left out a few countries, but there are...
Basically worldwide.
Pretty well worldwide. Interestingly enough, mostly in industrial nations. We don't know why that is, but there have been many, many, many thousands. And let's face it, Doug and Dave don't fly around the world.
No. What evidence is there, Chad, that whatever is doing this is also doing it in other areas? Is there any evidence of that at all? In other words, Is there ever any disturbed dirt or anything else that would indicate that had there been a crop there, you would have ended up with a crop circle, if you follow me, in any point other than in the middle of some farmer's crop?
Not really. we get many, many reports from people that we can't substantiate. We get no photographs or real proof. We have had several reports of circles in trees, but we haven't been able to substantiate that. I've heard of a few in ice fields in the north and a few other odd places, but again, we have no evidence of this. I take it just to be mistaken identity, and the numbers have been so small that we're not even paying much attention to them. I would say 99.5% at least of all the ones that have been reported to us have been in crops, which is a very interesting phenomenon in itself, because I look at I don't know what the intelligence is that's making these, but I know it's not an earthly intelligence. It's something alien.
Why?
Whatever it is, if I were them and I were trying to leave traces on Earth to get people's attention, I couldn't think of a better canvas than wheat fields or any kind of planted crop, because if nobody sees it at the time that it's created, it will certainly be found by the farmer at harvest time. It's an absolute guarantee that it will be found, and you can't put it anywhere else on this planet where you get an absolute guarantee it will be seen.
All right, let's say it is that an alien intelligence is behind it. Chad, what have we made of them so far? Do we see any message? Are we able to decipher any meaning in any of them so far?
Well, there have been tantalizing meanings. We have seen some astrological signs, such as the sign for Venus, Mars, Mercury, but not that often. We have seen tantalizing hints at ancient languages, such as ancient Hebrew, Egyptian, hieroglyphics, etc., etc., but nothing that we can really put a finger on, or nothing that will spell out a message to us. It seems more like these are symbols.
All right, let's try this avenue. How about anything repetitive? In other words, do you see any pattern frequently recurring?
Not really, no. The only pattern that we've seen frequently recurring are simple circles, or circles with rings on them. Sometimes there's a vague resemblance from one year to the next of a few, but most of them are brand new, new designs, new patterns.
When you're looking for some sign of a message, and I realize that I may be looking out of my own dimension, or within my own dimension and not looking out of mine, you look for anything we would understand, as you suggested, planetary symbols, some sort of language, some repetitive nature to what's being done, something that would tell you that it's an intelligence rather than a random occurrence.
Yeah, that's pretty well without doubt. There is an intelligence involved, not just in the placing of the formations in wheat in the crop fields. We have only on one or two occasions got them to go across roads or anything of that nature. They're always placed quite nicely in fields, so they're well aimed.
What about percentage of fakes? Now, obviously you were unable to examine every one of them that occurred, or even perhaps most of them. But in those you did examine, did you ever find one that you declared a fake, or one that you thought perhaps a farmer did to attract attention or charge an admission or whatever?
I haven't personally gone into one that I could absolutely declare a fake art. I have gone into quite a few where I can't say for sure whether they're fakes or not. There's just not enough in the formation, there's not enough complexity for me to say absolutely that this is a genuine phenomenon or a circle, or that this is a fake. I will simply say I don't have enough information on it, therefore...
Well, have you ever detected a farmer, for example, charging admission? In other words, whether it was an obvious profit motive?
No. And I'd like to address that aspect. There have been very, very few farmers, and they've all been in England, who have charged admission. And I really sympathize with their plight. When they get a crop formation in their field, first of all, because it's laying so flat, they literally lose hundreds of dollars in lost harvest because they can't pick it up anymore. Not only that, but people will go charging into their fields from all different angles, tromping through more crop.
Right.
They're faced with a loss, and simply what they're really trying to do is recover some of that loss. And it's not a profit-making kind of thing. They never make up for the loss. They have to have somebody in place. They have to pay this person to collect the money. And they really don't get enough people looking at them to make it worthwhile. They're just... I only know of two or three farmers that have done this to date out of the thousands of circles we've seen. So the profit motive is not there.
All right.
I've never seen anything really suspicious.
All right. There are molecular, reportedly molecular changes in this wheat, and I wonder if you can catch us up on that at all. That seems an area of fruitful research. In other words, changes that would occur that you would not see occur simply by crushing the crop normally. What do you find?
Okay. Well, first of all, Dr. Levengood, who's a biophysicist in Michigan, a very respected biophysicist, he's retired now. He has taken on looking at crop samples in his laboratory. He's spent thousands of hours, literally, last 3 years looking at this. What he has just recently come up with, first of all, he didn't know what to look for, so it took him quite a long time to know what part of the plant to look for, what changes to look for, etc. He has just come out with this a recent report, which is quite definitive. This is a real bright light for us in trying to prove the difference between a hoax circle or something like wind damage and the real phenomenon. What he has found, just to put it very simply, is in the cell wall of the plant, especially around the seed head, there's what is called a microfibril tissue. Now, that is a tissue that looks like cheesecloth when you blow it up on a microscope, and this allows for the transfer of nutrients between the cells. In this tissue, through this tissue is an ion transfer, and he has found that in affected crops, the ion transfer is much greater than in an unaffected crop. These microfibril tissue holes, that I would call them, where the ions that the ions transfer through are enlarged, substantially enlarged, allowing for a faster, freer flow of ions. And that you will not find in a mechanically damaged stock or in wind damage or any other form, only in affected crops.
How would we produce that effect if we wanted to?
About the only known way that he has come up with is through microwave activity. He has put stocks into microwave ovens and blasted them for 20 seconds or something of that nature, and has gotten not identical but similar effects, which leads us to believe that the energy involved in this is of a microwave nature. Not saying it is microwave, we're just saying it's something similar to microwave. And the other thing we realize...
This is going to begin to get a little technical, Chad, but it may well be that the microwave frequency used on the stalks would determine or would vary the effect on the stalks and on the membrane, the cell wall tissue you're talking about. I wonder if Dr. Levengood has experimented at all with varying the microwave frequency.
I don't know if he's gotten to that point in his lab. This report just came out about a month ago, and it's very time-consuming, the test that he's doing. But certainly, if he hasn't done it yet, he will be doing it to see. He's trying to estimate what the amount of energy that is required. He's got a pretty good idea already, and it's massive energy that's involved. I know people have asked me, how do you know it's not coming from a satellite? But this is a Star Wars technology, sort of a laser beam coming down and curving, sending this energy to a field to make a pattern.
Well, that'd be a big star too, wouldn't it, Chad?
Since it started before 1978, we have a few cases that go back into the 60s. It's unlikely that we had that sort of technology then, and we certainly don't have it even today, not that we know of. Also, the amount of energy required would literally kill animals in the field, such as mice, hedgehogs, birds, insects, and things of that nature.
Oh, now there's a good point. But no matter the source of the energy, wouldn't the effect on the animals arguably be the same?
effect on the animals would be totally devastating. It would.
Yes. But what I'm saying, Chad, is whether it was Star Wars technology that would produce something or microwave energy of that magnitude, or whether it's alien, shouldn't the effect on the animals be the same?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, for sure.
And yet it isn't, is it? It's only affecting the crops. Have you detected anything in terms of dead animals, microorganisms, that sort of thing?
We have never detected any dead animals in any of the formations except for two cases. And these occurred in Saskatchewan in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Very odd cases. One that I was involved in, and it was a dead porcupine found in the middle of a crop circle. It was
not only dead, but it was completely flat and dehydrated. It had been squished to about 2 inches in thickness. The claws on its back were swirled in the same direction as the swirl of the circle itself.
Oh, now that is significant.
That is very significant. It's one of these oddities that we don't know what to make of it because we haven't seen it before. But one possible explanation here is that porcupines, their natural response to danger is not to run away like all other animals would. It's to curl up in a ball. And that is possibly what happened. This unfortunate creature was caught in an area that was about to be turned into a crop circle, rolled up in a ball, and got caught by the energy and killed.
Wow, that's fascinating. Did anybody work with, do any sort of autopsy or look at this animal, poor animal?
Not on this one, because by the time we found out, it was too late to do a laboratory analysis, but from that case, a farmer phoned me and said that in 1989, he had a similar case, and this is the only other one we know of a dead porcupine found in a crop circle. He didn't know at the time that it was a crop circle. He called the police. He suspected it was some sort of satanic ritual that occurred in his field.
Mm-hmm.
He called the RCMP. They took tissue samples from the porcupine, or the remains of the porcupine. It was mostly a blackened area, about 3 feet by 3 feet. The only thing that was left of the porcupine were the quills and the bones. It was completely blackened in sort of a soot, covered in sort of a soot. The stalks of wheat were unaffected. It was only the animal itself. They sent some samples off to laboratory to find out if there was any burning involved, as from a fire, because they did suspect it was satanic worship.
Mm-hmm.
The lab report came back, and it was negative. And unfortunately, they didn't do any more testing on it than that. Because
so then it was as if it had been cooked again by microwave.
Completely fried. Completely fried. All the tissue, all the flesh was gone.
Mm.
All that remained were the quills and the bones. But again, these are the only two cases we know of, for whatever reason. Now again, getting back to the Star Wars technology, you would have to ask yourself, if this is what's going on, then why would they choose such heavily populated areas in central England to carry out these experiments? Somebody would be sure to be killed at some point. There are people in the fields practically every night watching fields. Watching for new formations being formed.
Oh, that's something I certainly want to ask you about. We have a break here at the top of the hour, Chad. 5 minutes of news. It'll give you about 5 minutes to relax, all right?
Okay.
All right, stay right where you are. Chad Deepkin is my guest. The subject, crop circles. A lot more to it than I thought, and we'll be talking more about it in a moment. This is Area 2000.
From Jackie Gons Plaza downtown, this is KDWN Las Vegas.
It's Sunday evening, and so here we are, as we are every Sunday, between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Chad Deepkin. The subject, crop circles, and a fascinating one it is. Chad, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Good. Well, I wanted to ask you next about humans. Indeed, they've had watches out, they've had cameras planted, they've looked for these crop circles to be in formation. Have they ever found it? Have they ever photographed one in the making?
Well, they haven't. We've been incredibly frustrated. People have reported seeing the maid, but we don't know what to make of it. The actual scientific researchers themselves have never seen one being made, and I have spent many, many nights out in the field.
What details have you had from anybody who claims to have seen them in the making? What do they say?
The common thing that they say is that the air is very still before it happens, dead calm. Suddenly, the heads of the wheat start waving back and forth violently, back and forth, back and forth. There is a whistling and howling sound, although there is no real wind around. And suddenly, within a split second, all the crops lays down flat to the ground in a spiral.
With nothing visible seen?
Nothing visible seen.
The conditions that you just described, Chad, are similar to those described by people who are in the vicinity of a tornado.
Yes. Yes, that is true. It's very similar.
Very still prior to the occurrence. They hear the noise. In the desert, which is where I am, very much in the desert, Chad, we have these mini tornadoes. One did a little damage out near my home recently. They're not really tornadoes as we understand them. They're certainly not spawned by a storm. But they are created through some sort of meteorological condition or swirling of winds, or I don't know precisely what does it, Chad, but have you looked into that?
Absolutely, yes. We've looked into that, all sorts of meteorological conditions. In England in particular, because of the rain and the stiff winds they get occasionally and the rolling hills, which catches the wind at odd angles, there's a lot of damage to the fields. I've seen fields that were up to 75% damaged, flattened, or mostly flattened. The crop circles bear no resemblance whatsoever to any kind of wind damage that anybody has ever seen. They are like cookie cutters, stamped out. Very, very clean, clear, defined edges. Whereas wind damage is just what you would expect. Undefined, usually very lengthy corridors where the wind touches down and then picks up again.
Hmm. Would seem to eliminate wind then.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, back to humans. Has there ever been a human standing in the middle of a created crop circle?
In the middle of a crop circle as it was created?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody. No. The closest we got is people who have been several hundred feet away. And these were in the daytime, by the way. They were not at night. And we have to take their word for it. We have no photographic evidence.
Then your best evidence you would consider to be what? About the fact that these are related, for example, the relationship to UFOs. Is it a tight relationship, Chad, or very loose, or what do you think?
Well, personally, no, I'm guessing, but personally, there is a loose relationship to UFOs. It may be a lot tighter than I realize. We have seen strange lights over the fields at night. Last year, in 1992, there was a sighting near a crop circle by a team of researchers of a structured UFO.
Mm.
It wasn't that far away. It was Stephen Greer.
You probably have him.
I have, yes.
There were at least five witnesses. They all report the same thing. One of the witnesses is a friend of mine, a very, very rational person. I believe what he says. It was a three-dimensional structured craft. They saw the light. It went around the hill that they were standing on. It even heard any sound. It showed the light underneath it and disappeared. That was an unusual sighting. Other than that, there have been lights reported at night, and a few times in the daytime, and we have this on film, silvery objects were seen skimming across the tops of wheat fields. Mm-hmm. And strangely enough, these objects were very small, anywhere from a foot to 3 feet in diameter, but shiny, silvery objects, self-propelled evidence, obviously, you can see from their motion. But other than that, there were a few other reports of strange lights like Ferris wheels in the sky. Mm-hmm. But I myself have not seen any of these. The best I can tell you is that one night we were on a crop watch, and there was a tremendous flash on the horizon. It seemed to be quite a ways away, sort of like sheet lightning. But in fact, it was very close to us. All the lights went out in the village where I was staying. And the electric company had no idea why the lights went out, and they had no idea what the flash was.
So you go on crop watches?
Yes.
And I take it you just pick a high point, and do you use night vision equipment, or what do you do on one of these watches?
We do have night vision equipment, and I personally use a camera. I have a wide-angle lens on it. I put it on a tripod, and I'll take time exposures from anywhere from 5 minutes to half an hour, and then see what I get on the photograph the next day. In one particular incident, this is the best one I've been on, we mostly come up empty-handed, but in one incident, there was a very large formation in the field, and that was in August of this year. Beautiful formation, very, very spectacular, very strange anomalous effect in the lathe. I had a powerful feeling that this field was super energized, and I wanted to go back that same night. I thought something else might happen. So I went back in my car with a friend, and we parked on a hill overlooking the field. We sat there. I took pictures. We sat there until about 2:30 in the morning. It was quite cold. And we just got cold and tired, and we didn't want to leave the car running all night. So we thought, well, we'll turn and sleep. First thing in the morning, the daybreak, somebody came back, and sure enough, there was a brand new addition to the crop circle that we had been watching.
Oh, boy. I'm sure you kicked yourself around for a while on that one.
It's really typical, Art. When they're not being watched, things happen, even to your back sometimes. 2020, which is an ABC TV program, they did a night watch a few years back, sitting on top of a hill with very sophisticated camera equipment with about a dozen people. They were looking down in a field where they had a lot of formation. And had the cameras running all night. Next morning when the sun came up, they looked down, there was nothing. And somebody said, "Oh my God, look to your back." Right behind them in a field behind, there was a huge formation.
No.
Largest one to date.
Oh boy. Oh, boy. Then you share, really, the same frustration that the people trying to research this UFO phenomenon do. It occurs and occurs and keeps occurring, but not so that you can carefully and scientifically document it, and almost seems to avoid areas where there are researchers or foils them, as you have just said. It must be tremendously frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. We run into this constantly. About 2 years ago, Colin Andrews and a crew did the same thing. They were on a night watch with sophisticated equipment. They watched a field. They were up on a hill watching a field. They sat up all night just before the sun came up. While it was still dark, a fog descended on the field. Now, there are many, many witnesses to this. They have it on film. A fog descended on this field, which is not totally uncommon in England, but just on this particular field. And
let me guess, when the fog lifted,
got it.
There it was.
There it was. Out of their sight, right in front of their eyes, but they couldn't penetrate the fog. There it was. And this happens time and time again. It's very, very obvious. The intelligence does not want to be seen. It's taking great lengths to avoid testing it. And you mentioned Project Argus last year.
Yes. What exactly was that?
The Project Argus was funded mostly by a grant, a very generous grant from the Bigelow Foundation. And it was an effort, an international effort, by about two to three dozen people. About half of them were scientists. We went out and we used all kinds of electronic instruments, anything that we could think of, to try to determine mostly what the energy is that's involved in it, to try to detect it coming from the sky, from the ground. We tried to find traces of radiation in the crop and the soil. We took soil samples and sent them back to have them analyzed in the labs.
Yes, I was going to suggest, Chad, what about the possibility, if there is the funding, mm-hmm. for some sort of microwave energy sensor or sensors mm-hmm. placed in a lot of likely locations
that might yield some information, since it seems to be a microwave radiation doing this, or maybe.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be an idea?
It's a great idea, and we actually did it this year. By the way, the Project Argus didn't come up with a smoking gun. We got some very interesting...
What were the final conclusions of the report?
Well, the final conclusions of the report were that electronically we weren't able to detect anything. But again, with the physical anomalous effects on the ground and other things that we couldn't really put under a microscope, we continued to gather tantalizing information. When you put it all together, you cannot get a full picture of it. But we're gathering more and more information. What really came out of Project Argus is that we were able to eliminate tests that we didn't need to do anymore because we have quite frankly exhausted them, which is very helpful. It tends to focus our projects for the following year. And this year, as I mentioned, microwave was one of the detections.
Yes. Chad, will you speak, do you speak from time to time with Dr. Levengood?
I'm in regular contact with him.
Would you ask him for me if he's considered experimenting with varying the microwave frequency and trying to produce an identical effect to the one he observes on the cell wall tissue? That might yield some interesting results if you could actually pin down the rough frequency that's being used.
Yeah. He has done experiments on the amount of energy that's required to get an equivalent effect.
Do you know what he's concluded?
He told me about a year ago when he was doing this that something in the nature of a, now don't quote me exactly on this, but it's something in the nature of a 20 to 30 second blast of microwave energy from a household microwave oven. Now you have to remember that this is very, very close quarters.
Yeah, I understand.
You're only inches away. And to get the same effect from an airplane or a satellite, the energy is absolutely mind-boggling, and we simply don't have a microwave generator that is capable of creating that much power.
Particularly from that far up in space, it would have to be a geosynchronous satellite that puts it 22,500 miles above Earth.
Yes. And again, it would be so incredibly dangerous that somebody would have been killed by now, or at least somebody would have detected the energy. Now, getting back to Dr. Levengood, I did a test myself on germination. He did some germination tests. In other words, taking the seeds from crop circles and from control samples without outside of the crop circles so we can get a comparison, and germinating them under laboratory conditions. And I did this under laboratory conditions at home, and the results were the same as his. Very odd. The seeds from the crop circle germinated much faster and at a much higher rate than the seeds from outside.
What happens to the seeds of the stalks that he puts into a microwave oven to try to produce a similar effect? Do you get a similar effect with the seeds?
I don't believe he's done a germination test on them yet, although it's obvious that this will be the next step.
Well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yes. And furthermore, after the germination, when I began to grow them, I planted them in my garden. And I planted one set under very soft conditions in full shade and another set in full sunlight to do a comparison of how fast they grow.
Right.
The set, the control, and from the circle sample in the full sun, there was no difference in the growth. They grew normally. But the set that was in the full shade, which is very bad conditions for wheat, they need sun. The seeds from the crop circle grew at a very fast rate, almost normal. Not quite. They were a bit stunted, but almost normal.
As compared to the other sample, which what?
It grew twice as tall. Inexplicable.
Wow.
We have no idea why. Something has affected the seeds. The energy that caused the crop circle has affected the seeds in such a way that it changed something in the genetic makeup of the seeds.
Well, then he's going to surely want to follow up with the artificially produced radiation and see if he can get a similar effect. That's fascinating.
Yes, he would be doing this winter.
All right, we're in that weird period of time, Chad, now, between Christmas and New Year.
and in the new year, and it's traditional to make predictions. So I thought I would ask you to make one in the area of crop circles. What do you think is going to go on in this next year?
Well, that's a tough one, but judging from the past, I would venture to guess that the crop circles are going to become even more complex, and that each year we have gotten more tantalizing information on the crop circles. It's to keep our attention. I mean, these are obviously to get our attention. They're
right.
Whatever reason. I think there's going to be more of that. We're going to get more information, and we may hopefully get closer to what the purpose of these are and where they're coming from.
Well, perhaps you're right. Perhaps up until now it's been to get our attention, and maybe once our attention is fully focused, we'll begin to see some sort of message or... But documentably, you're suggesting every year we're getting more crop circles. That, too, is very interesting.
Not necessarily more. The height of the crop circle numbers were in 1990.
Oh.
Which season there were 1,000, just in England, in one single season. 1991, they cut back to about half of that. 1992, about 400. And this year, 1993, somewhere around 300.
All right. Chad, let me ask this. What you're suggesting is not very far off the peak of the sun cycle.
That's right.
And we are now very much in a declining mode for the 11-year sun cycle. Has anybody done any research into a relationship?
Well, Dr. Levengood, being a true conservative scientist, believes that this has to do with the sunspot activity.
Oh.
Yeah. He wanted me to say that because he doesn't believe in alien intelligence or anything of that nature. And to us, that's fine. He's a good scientist. What's really important to us is his research and the results of it.
Well,
I had a discussion with Dr. Levengood, and I said, okay, supposing the energy that's involved here has something to do with sunspot activity, I can accept that. But what I can't accept is that how this energy could randomly affect wheat fields in such a way to create these incredible patterns in the fields.
There is no specific explanation.
Oh, it would have to be a guided energy. And there are two aspects of the crop circles. One is that there's an energy involved in allowing the wheat to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is that it is guided, just like a paintbrush. Mm-hmm. I look at the whole phenomenon like an artist, using the energy like a paintbrush to draw on a canvas of wheat these spectacular patterns to gain our attention. That's the closest analogy I can make. And not only that, but I see different, if you would have entities or artists involved, there's some similarities between some of the formations. You can almost see that the same entity is involved in certain ones. They have certain characteristics that are similar. And that goes for Canada, comparing with some of the ones I've seen in England.
Hmm.
Some are very, very sophisticated, incredibly beautifully laid down. Others are much more childlike in their nature, and maybe not quite as well laid down. And it also, there are varying amounts of energy that are applied. Some are flat to the ground, others are maybe just a few inches off the ground. They haven't been completely pressed down, as if less energy was involved.
Well, coming back to the sun cycle, of course, spots, what we call sunspots, are actually flares, and we get flares from the sun most frequently at high activity points during that 11-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But I know of no specific energy, nowhere near that specific, that could affect the Earth through the atmosphere, none at all. Nevertheless, what kind of parallels has he been able to make between sunspot activity and crop circle activity?
Simply that the period around 1990 was the height in sunspot activity, and that coincides with the sheer numbers of crop circles seen.
Yes, and has there been a decline that coincides roughly with the decline in the sunspot cycle count?
Apparently, yes. It is now in a decline, and we're seeing a decline in the numbers of the crop circles. But, again, the complexity is picking up. They're much, much more complex than ever before.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense.
Oh, no, it just doesn't tie in. We have looked literally at hundreds and hundreds of different explanations. We have people with PhDs in all different disciplines, including mathematics, music, you name it.
Yeah, it's enough to cause a scientist to drive him to drink or something.
Well,
it's
awful. Well, it just becomes more and more tantalizing. It's more of a challenge all the time. And I might add, Art, that not only am I looking at the physical anomaly, the anomalous effects in the field itself, like in the stalks and the soil, etc., but also the strange effects that are noted on equipment that we've been using. And this is another category that isn't talked about very much.
All right, tell us.
It's worth mentioning. I'll give you an example of this year. For one thing, I and most people have noted headaches as we walk into the crop circle. Quite pronounced. Not a painful headache, but just like somebody put their hand on your brain and started squeezing a little bit. And this sensation ends once you leave the area. Not in all of them, but in a lot of them. And in one formation, I always have a tape recorder, a little pocket tape recorder. I put it in the center of the formation where the center swirl is and lay it on the ground, and I just let it record while I'm photographing and doing my measurements and things. Because in the past, there have been electronic beepings and chirpings that have been recorded, so I'm just curious to see if I can pick any of this up.
Mm-hmm.
In this one particular incident, the tape recorder recorded for a full hour. When I took it back and listened to it, I realized that the entire recording from beginning to end ran at half speed. Exactly at half speed. And I know that because you can hear us talking. Occasionally you can hear voices.
Mm.
The whole thing ran at half speed. It wasn't because the batteries were going dead, because it wasn't declining in speed. It was exactly the same speed. This tape recorder is not capable of recording at any other speed. And it's never done it before. It's never done it since. There's nothing wrong with the unit. I've had it analyzed. In that same formation, a German film crew came in and wanted to film me pointing out these anomalies. On the ground, we went ahead with it. They had a fully charged battery pack. They had a needle on their camera that showed a full charge. The battery pack normally lasts about 35 to 40 minutes. Their battery was flat, completely stone dead within 8 minutes.
Oh,
they were totally amazed.
All right, that Chad, would indicate some strong electromagnetic activity of some sort, and that seems to me could be measured.
You would think it could be measured, but we haven't to date found any instrument that'll measure it. And interestingly enough, we have only experienced this sort of rapid battery drain, is what we call it,
mm-hmm.
on rechargeable batteries. It hasn't been noted on ordinary throwaway batteries, only on rechargeable.
On NiCats.
That's right. another phenomenon that occurred again this year, but has been noted in the past, is camera failures. I flew with three other people. Two of us had mechanical cameras like Pentaxes with no electronics.
Right.
The third person had a fully electronic camera. Everything was electronic, an $800 camera. He could not get a photograph of one particular formation when he flew over it. The camera jammed every single time. Yet when he aimed it out the other side of the window of the plane, it worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he aimed it back at the crops formation down below, it jammed on him. He never did get a picture of it.
Hmm.
That also is quite common. Or film that won't develop. You take pictures and the photographs of one particular formation are all blank, whereas everything else is perfectly in focus, perfectly exposed, everything's perfect.
Well, that would certainly indicate the presence of some sort of energy. Chad, stand by 1 second while I ID the radio station here.
So.
From Jackie Gons Plaza downtown, this is KDWN Las Vegas.
It is, and this is Area 2000. Good evening. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Chad Deakin, and I'm going to open up the telephone lines now. So let me give you a quick version of the numbers. You're welcome to call us with a question if you like. In the metropolitan area of Las Vegas, the number is 383-8255 or 8255. Toll free outside the state, it's 1-800-338-8255.
The wild card direct dial lines are area code 702-385-7214. And finally, if you have never called the program at all, use this line, the first-time caller line at area code 702-385-7213, 7213. With all the long-distance lines, please allow them to ring until they're answered. We'll come to you as soon as we can. If you're disconnected, pick it up and try again.
Chad, are you there? All right, good. If you're up to it, I would like to let you subject you to a little bit of the great unwashed American public with questions.
Sure. That's always a lot of fun.
All right, it is. Let's see what we can do. Wildcard line 3, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Deakin.
Two questions, one for Mr. Bell and one for Mr. Deakin. First, Mr. Bell, you mentioned Defense Secretary Designate Inman had been asked by a Maryland investigator about MG-12, but you did not mention what Mr. Inman's reaction was.
Well, was allegedly. No, you go right ahead if you wish.
I don't know. I was waiting.
I see.
Waited.
All right. Well, we'll get further into that. It was kind of a side topic from what we're now on. So you had a question otherwise?
Yes, Mr. Deakin. I'm interested in whether in Project Argus you had more fully explored the Star Wars technology, microwaves or lasers, as possibly being a cause of the crop circles, and whether now you mentioned that you had determined that excess energy would have to be involved, which would have killed mice and hedgehogs. But I understand that there is a very finely focused, finely tuned technology involved with the Star Wars technology, which would be able, perhaps by computerized programs, to create interweaving or multi-layering. And I'm interested in what you whether you've explored this more deeply, and again, also I'm interested in what Mr. Bell's reaction is to the first question, and I'll end up and let you answer.
All right, thank you. All right, well, that would divert us entirely from where we are to talk about the Bobby Ray Inman business. So let's just focus, Chad, if we can, on his question to you, and that is the Star Wars technology aspect. How hard did you look at that?
Well, it's difficult to deal with the unknown. First of all, we have literally several hundred miles to cover, even though that most of these craft formations are happening in a relatively small area, say 30 mile circular area. It's difficult to cover all the fields and to get the instrumentation in there. But I would just say again that since craft circles were known before the late 1970s, we have some cases, including in Canada. It's hard to imagine that this sort of technology, even if it exists today, which I highly doubt, and most of us doubt this, that it would have existed back then. And
one might guess, though, that if it did exist, farmers' fields might be a pretty good place to test it.
Yes, they would, but why continue for 15, 20 years?
True.
When there's so much attention, when there are literally hundreds and hundreds of people around in very, very close proximity to these, it just seems like it's too dangerous.
Particularly as people like yourself began to seriously investigate it, you would think at that point they would halt it.
Sure, and if the government were carrying out secret experiments, wouldn't they be more inclined to do it in a closed-off area, say like Area 51, where the public can't get into? Why would they choose a populated area? There are many, many aspects that we have thought about that simply don't add up. They just don't make any sense.
All right. Well, let's keep moving here. On the first-time caller line, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Deakin. Hello there.
Hi, this is George in Orange, California.
Hi, George.
Now, well, the comment I'd like to make is the witnesses of the crop circle said that, you know, that it was blackness in a cloud and spoiled, exactly the same experience that people have who observe UFOs or who have become abducted by UFOs. They claim that the atmosphere around them became totally still and quiet at the time of their abduction,
And it just seems like they're...
You see a relationship there. All right, caller, thank you. Chad, what about that? There is a connection between the two phenomena, a kind of a very still atmosphere just before the event.
Yes, exactly. And looking at all the facts, Art, most of us would have to say that the UFO connection is probably the strongest, even though we don't have any absolute evidence. Nothing points to more to anything else like UFOs.
So while it is a loose connection, according to your own words earlier,
yes,
it is nevertheless the best connection?
The best we can come up with at this time. We know that there's an intelligence involved. It's very, very plain to us. It's playing little games with us, and we feel its presence. It plays little tricks with us. And it's certainly, it must be of an alien nature.
That's really something. All right, wildcard line three. Good evening, you're on the air with Chad Deakin.
Hello, this is Mike from Redding, California.
Hi, Mike. Turn your radio off, Mike.
Okay.
There is a delay system here, everybody, so please, when you get on the air, immediately turn your radio off.
Yeah, there was a story I heard recently about a crop circle that when they looked at the pattern on the crop circle, they found a coin inside the crop circle that had the same pattern printed on it. Have you heard anything about that story at all?
Where was this coin?
This was supposedly a crop circle in England.
All right. Chad, have you heard anything of that?
Not of that particular one, but it sounds an awful like the one in Germany.
All right, caller, thank you. There was one like that in Germany?
The famous case in Germany of a complex crop formation. It was many circles joined together by lines, and a fellow went into it. A lot of mystery around this one, but we know the facts. But the fellow went into it with a metal detector. We don't know why, because nobody else has done it before. And in the center of the circle, one of the circles, he dug up three metal objects, and they turned out to be plates. One was pure gold, one was pure silver, and I believe the third was pure bronze.
Wow.
And it had the imprint, the exact imprint of the crop formation on it. It was taken away very fast. It was bought up by a collector.
Wow.
The gold one was melted down, but apparently the silver one and the bronze one still exist. Now, again, like anything else, there are a lot of strange stories surrounding this. What the absolute facts are, we don't know. It's one of a kind again. It's never happened before. If this is an authentic case...
Well, have there been similar searches, Chad, made of crop circles looking for this?
Well, people will dig up the center of crop circles. I've run into this quite often. If you're not the first one there, if you're there a day or two later, you'll find that the center quite often is gone. Somebody's taken a shovel and taken all the dirt away for souvenir or for testing or for...
All right, we're talking to a very wide part of the world right now, Chad. A lot of states, a lot of them farming states. If you could give any advice to a farmer who might have a crop circle suddenly appear, what would you tell the farmer?
Number one, don't let anybody into it until a researcher has been there. This is really, really critical for us, especially for me. I need to get in there before anybody else does to check for footprints, before the stalks are crushed, before any damage has been done to it, to try to get some samples, to do the photography, to look at it very closely. After I or other people like me have spent, say, 2, 3, 4 hours in it, then it could be open to the public. Now, this is really difficult, but that's the one thing I always ask of farmers. Please, please, please save it in its pristine form until we get there.
All right, well, look, I'm going to put myself in the position of a farmer. I go out one morning, somehow I'm on the higher ground. I look out, oh, my God, there is a big crop circle right in the middle of my field. Well, I'm going to go flip open the yellow pages to crop circles. Uh-uh. I mean, who do I call?
Generally, the first people they call are UFO researchers, or if they don't have them, they'll phone the press. In England, I'm talking mostly about North America.
Right.
Because of the vast areas we're covering. In Canada, I'm trying to cover 600,000 square miles. In England, we're talking about a very small area with a lot of rolling hills. the vast majority of the crop circles are discovered either by the farmer or by somebody driving by first thing in the morning, because there's hills all over and they're easily seen.
Well, if you get a call, Chad, that one's occurred somewhere, even if you did go and investigate, presumably most times they're hundreds or maybe even thousands of miles away.
Yes.
You can't possibly get there fast enough to do any research before, you know, a whole herd of people have gone over it.
Oh, and that's, especially in Canada, this is very true, and it's a problem. Last year, I was fortunate enough to be called by a farmer who I knew from before. He phoned me up and said he had a brand new crop circle in oats. It was a circle with a ring around it. He asked me if I wanted to come out and look at it. A few people had already been there, and I said, well, okay, I'll do it. I mean, I'll get another chance in Canada this year. So I flew out to see it. I got there about noon the next day, and a brand new one had formed that very night. He knew it wasn't there before. It was within sight of the road, not a well-traveled road, because he had traveled by it that evening on his way home. It wasn't there in the evening. It was there the first thing in the morning. He knew I was coming, so he didn't tell anybody, and he watched it from across the road to make sure nobody else would go into it. He didn't touch it. I was the first one into that, and that was a really precious one for me. It wasn't very complex, but it was really important. I spent 6 hours in it, crawling on my hands and knees, starting from the very outside, looking for footprints for one in the soil, very dry soil. I didn't find one single clod of earth disturbed, pressed down, or disturbed in any way. In this particular formation, the wheat, this one occurred in wheat, although the one he phoned me about was in oats. The wheat wasn't completely pressed flat to the ground. It was a few inches off the ground, which showed that if anybody had done it with an instrument, you would not have had the wheat popped up a few inches. So no physical object of any kind had been in this crop circle, which proved to me this was one of the rare cases that no human was involved in this.
Wow.
It not possibly have been. Also, in Canada, we don't have any tram lines like they do in England, sort of tractor marks. There's no way to get into the field without leaving a trail. You'd have to be dropped by a helicopter. There's other way to get in there.
Yeah, what a puzzle. All right, Chad, let's keep moving. Line one, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Deakin.
Yeah, Chad, I had a conversation with Paul Winfield this last week here in Las Vegas at the UFO convention. Apparently, he said, and I was in search of, because I'm studying the old ancient Hebrew text and ancient languages in correlation with the crop circles. It appeared to me at first when I started doing this that if anybody was going to try and give us a message, the first things they'd do is send us their alphabet. And if the simplest crop circles are a form of teaching us their alphabet, the more that we've had time to study them, the more complex the sentences would be. I asked him if he had a copy of any research done on the chronological order of appearance and locations, and he said to date he doesn't know of anybody that has a listing of chronological order of appearance. Do you know where I could get hold of something like that?
I think your best source would be Colin Andrews.
Colin.
Who lives in Connecticut.
And you had said once before that there's been other studies on this. What actual messages have they come up with, or what sentences have they come up with? Because I've come up with at least one.
Yeah, there was a couple of cases where it almost looked like writing. These were crop formations, at least that's what we call them, but they looked more like hieroglyphic writing. And one was supposedly translated by a fellow in California, Eric Beckhold, and the translation was so odd that I hesitate to repeat it. It said that fill up your wells. There's a drought coming.
Huh. That's interesting. Actually, that would be relevant for a farmer, I suppose.
Yeah. One sentence,
caller, what did you get?
Well, the one sentence that we were able to depict was the serpent race returns.
The serpent race returns.
Yes.
Which formation would that have been? In England?
Yes, it was one out of the earlier ones in England. But it seems to me that if the government had anything to do with it, they certainly wouldn't be doing it in a field and immediately going out and erasing it.
No.
And if the message, if it is in fact a message, then it means that whoever is trying to give the common people the message, the government doesn't want the common people to know what the message is.
Caller, could you supply Chad Deakin with a photograph of the one from which you deciphered that message?
If you give his name and if you give his address and everything, I'm sure we can get in touch with him.
All right, we'll do it. Thank you. All right, so there you have it. What is your address? How would he send you something, Chad?
Okay, it's Pacific Research, Box 74537, 2803 West 4th Avenue, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the postal code V6K1R0. Yeah, I would appreciate any information from anyone, because that's what we're doing.
All right, you better do all that again. That's a long address.
Yeah. It's Box 74537, and the street address, 2803 West 4th Avenue, Vancouver, Canada, V6K1R0.
That's some address.
Long address, yeah.
All right, good. Well, hopefully he will send you a copy of that. That's fascinating. Yeah. All right, on the first-time caller line, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Dietkin.
Well, are any of these crop circles in Scotland? You've mentioned only England.
True. Thank you, caller. What about Scotland, Chad?
I believe there have been a few, something like half a dozen perhaps at the most. And there have been a few in Wales. But again, the vast, vast majority are in south-central England.
All right. Line two, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Dietkin.
Good evening. You know, it appears to me that the some of these crop circle formations resemble schematics for electronic circuits, especially if you place them in certain configurations. It also it appears to me that some of the characteristics of the crop formations, like you were saying, you couldn't take pictures of certain ones. Certain anomalies involved with the formation of the circles have characteristics of, I don't know if you're familiar with Wilhelm Reich.
Yes.
And his experimentations with Oregon energy.
That's right.
A lot of the characteristics that are displayed in these crop circles were the same type of effects that he got with Oregon energy. Also, are you familiar with radionics at all?
Not really.
All right. Well, let's hold it there. Thank you. Nevertheless, his comment about a schematic is of some interest. Maybe we're looking at it, Chad, in the wrong way. An electronic schematic. I've not seen the similarities, but who's to say that they're trying to give us a schematic of electronics that we understand?
Well, that leads us to one of our biggest frustrations, or at least my biggest frustration. What I say quite often is, if these intelligences are so advanced, why can't they give us a language that we can understand? If these indeed are communications or some form of a language or schematics of something or other, why not talk to us on our own level? We have put 12 years of research into this, and there are a lot of really good minds working at it. And we haven't been able to come up with anything of significance in the way of a language or any kind of meaning like that. Why fool around? Why not just put it in English? Why not even Latin, German, whatever?
Sure, if they really intended to communicate with us, that certainly is true.
Sure, talk to us on our own level.
Sure. All right, puzzle after puzzle, more questions and answers. Wildcard Line 3, good evening. You're on the air with Chad Dietkin.
Good evening. This is Fritz calling.
Yes.
It's only fair that I announce that tomorrow, Monday, the Mandel Williams Show will also have a UFO program for those out there in the UFO land. I'm sure you're going to tune in. Now, I would say this. It is my firm belief that the crop circle phenomenon is definitely connected with UFOs, but with our current level of scientific knowledge and understanding, and Chet just pointed out, it is very difficult to analyze that pattern. After all, it is like conditioning process, or what I call from below. But my scenario is this, that above 1,000 or 2,000 feet in a different dimension sits the spacecraft, looking through a dimensional window, and just like a slide projection to a screen, the focus and through the crop circle formation for our awareness. Since we don't look up, perhaps they catch our eyes looking down.
All right, Fritz. Good, good question. Another dimension that the craft itself is in another dimension, Chad. A lot of work being done about other dimensions, period, as it relates to UFOs and travel and all the rest of it. What do you think about that?
Well, sure, that is a definite possibility. For one thing, we're looking at the crop circles not just in a two-dimensional plane, but in a three-dimensional plane, and we're getting computer, using computer graphics to try to do that. And as far as trying to find out where this intelligence is coming from, it could very well be from another dimension, another...
Yeah, toward that end, Chad, have they taken a computer and modeled these circles in different dimensions, looking for some sense to them in other dimensions, as if, for example, you would view them from the side rather than from above?
Absolutely, yes. There's a lot of work being done in that right now. It's relatively new, and... we have a long ways to go yet. What we're finding are, getting back to the language and symbolism, possibly electronic circuits or whatever, we're finding a very interesting mathematical relationship in the crop circles.
Oh.
It's based on a diatonic scale, which is a musical scale. Taking the diameters and the distances that circles are apart from each other and the widths of paths that connect them, etc., etc., there's a very, very interesting relationship there. So possibly, if there is a language, it may be mathematical, and maybe they are trying to talk to us on that level, a very simple mathematical level. Gerald Hawkins has done a lot of work on that. Nothing definite yet, but the most tantalizing area yet to be explored is the mathematical aspect.
Fascinating. All right. Well, hopefully you'll update us. I'd sure like to keep track of what's happening, Chad, so I hope you'll keep in touch.
There are constant developments.
All right. Good evening. Good evening on the first time caller line. You're on the air with Chad Deacon.
Yes, hello.
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay. Yes, a question. Somebody has a crop circle to report. How are they going to get through by writing a letter quickly enough? And I have another question after that.
All right.
Oh, is there a phone number?
Chad, is there a number or a central reporting point, or how does somebody do this?
I'll give up my phone number.
You are you sure you want to do that now?
Sure, that's fine.
All right.
It's area code 604.
Okay.
732-0092.
0090? 0092, correct. I'll read it again. Where is that, Chad?
In Vancouver.
Vancouver, British Columbia. Area code 604-732-0092.
Right.
Okay. And the other thing is that I was in England in 78 around Stonehenge and traveling around the country and remember seeing these large indentations in these very low-cut grass fields, and it was almost like looking at a golf course and seeing these big round circles that had little channels going into other circles, and there was also mounds that were protruding above the ground that were very strange, and I never got an explanation for those. And
what year was that?
In 77.
77, that is pretty well pre-crop circle time. They may have been mounds, burial mounds. I've been to Stonehenge several times, and all around Stonehenge are very low mounds. They're only about 4 to 10 feet high, and they keep them... They cover them in grass. They're not crops, in fact. They're grass, and they keep them closely cropped. But I don't really know what you were looking at, but I doubt if it was crop circle.
Well, the other, they're not really crop circles, but the other things that were, like, just right on the ground and indentions in the ground, maybe 8 inches deep, and perfect circles, and just everything seemed very symmetrical, and they were just all over the countryside.
Could they have been ancient excavations, or excavations for the stones? The large stones that they built Stonehenge with.
Mm-hmm.
In a crop circle, you don't get an indentation in the ground. There's no physical imprint whatsoever. It's only the crop that is bent, flattened to the ground. But the ground itself is physically untouched.
All right. Thank you, caller. Chad, again, you know, if that kind of radiation was used, or some sort of radiation, one would think that it would also affect the microorganisms that are normally found teeming in fertile earth. And would that not be another area of investigation?
Sure, yeah, and it has been investigated. The microorganism is very sensitive, of course, and any small amount of energy would affect it drastically, and we have found no effect. But also insects, there are tons of insects in the fields at all times, grasshoppers, aphids, things of that nature. They would also be affected, and they haven't been. Only those two porcupines. I just don't know why porcupines would have been virtually cremated.
This is just enough to drive you up a tree.
It's just no evidence that you can find time and time again. There are little bits and pieces of different things. When you piece them all together, you simply, like a puzzle, it doesn't fit together. You can't get a whole picture. At least not yet.
So this will drive you then to continue to investigate all of this. How are you going to proceed? We're very short on time now. But where does your investigation go from here, Chad?
Back to England.
Back to England.
That's right, yeah. Next year I'll be going back for another month. There will be more scientific testing, more instruments used, more observations, etc. Anything we could possibly think of. There are a lot of very imaginative people, scientists included, involved in this. Until we can get the smoking gun, so to say, we won't stop. Once you're a crop circle investigator, you cannot put it down. It's totally infectious.
All right. Well, you have been a joy to interview. It's been great. I'm sorry we could use hours more, but we don't have them.
Well, thank you very much, Art. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
Chad, I would like to be sure to invite you back. We're going to have you back again.
Sure. I'll give you an update for the coming year.
Wonderful. Chad Deacon, thank you. And that's it, folks. I'm sorry, we're out of time. We'll do this again next Sunday evening at 8. To all of you left on the line, thank you for being so patient. I'm sorry we didn't get you all in. Remember, your contact at the Bigelow Foundation is Angela Thompson at area code 702-456-1606. For area 2000, I'm Art Bell.
The preceding program was made possible by a grant from the Bigelow Foundation. This has been Area 2000, a program that introduces our listeners to the scientific approach for discussion of two particular subjects, UFOs and near-death and after-death experiences. To contact the Bigelow Foundation, please call during the week between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., area code 702-456-1606. Ask for Angela Thompson. That's area code 702-456-1606. And be with us next Sunday evening at 8 for another edition of Area 2000. Downtown. This is KDWN Las Vegas.